Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Music by Mario Broeders, the Vals Criollo, No. 3, performed by our guest today, Miriam Conti, pianist. I'd like to welcome today Miriam Conti, wonderful pianist who has recently released an album. Welcome to Crossover, Miriam.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to this interview.
One thing I'm quite interested in, it's on the Steinway & Sons label, which is a relatively new label. And mm-hmm. This is your second recording for them, is that right?
Yes, exactly, yes. The first recording was Chopin Complete Mazurkas.
And you are a Steinway artist, and you are based, actually, in New York City.
In New York, yes. So yeah. I try to, you know, promote this and the piano and music as best as I can.
I also read that you had a scholarship that was established at Juilliard for you. In your name?
In my name. It was actually, this was a violinist who worked under Toscanini in the NBC Orchestra. And he knew me and, you know, I was a student there. He was a very supportive person. And so after he passed away, he left an estate instructions to give money to the Juilliard School in my name. So I thought that was a wonderful, you know, honor to me. I mean, of course, I don't get that money, of course.
No, but...
this is for young students starting at Juilliard. So it's great, you know. You always meet such nice people throughout, you know, your careers.
Yes, of course. And you're selected as one of 100 outstanding alumni to celebrate
centennial. Yes, that was for the centennial. Yes, I remember when I got the letter at home, saying, you know, you've been selected. My husband looked at it and said, you have to pay something for that?
Well, I mean, pay them off,
suspicious,
right?
You know? It's like one of those, you know, who is who?
Yes.
I said, no, I don't think so.
No, it's absolutely free.
Well, I guess they selected me because they were looking for graduates that, besides performing and doing all the things that you do as a performer, you are doing other things to help music or culture or whatever. So, and since I have always been involved in helping young musicians and promoting the music of the Americas, so I've done a lot of competition, festival, marathons, benefit things. So I do organize things to promote the young musicians, which I think, you know,
it's the future.
They really need it. Yeah. They really need it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And of course, we won't even get into the life of being a musician and what has happened to the music business. But in terms of your expertise as an artist, you are originally from where in Argentina?
I was born in the north of Argentina, but like everybody, you know, you live there and then you end up moving to the city, to Buenos Aires for work, and especially my father. My father, he's an artist, so Buenos Aires was the city to be for artists. And, so,
and for tango, I might add, because I was twice for tango.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that while I was living there, you know, the tango wasn't in my mind at all, because it's almost like you underestimate your own music. So it's like the tango was there on TV all day. You know, you got this great orchestra. Now I say they're great orchestra, but at that time you were kind of bored seeing the same faces all the time. But I wish I paid attention, or somebody told me, you know, these are great tango musicians, so pay attention. But since I was a classically trained musician, you know, I was stuck with, you know, the usual repertoire, Bach, Mozart, Chopin, you know, the classics. And the music of my native country wasn't really, you know, promoted well in conservatories.
Music of Pedro Sanz, performed by our guest today, Miriam Conti. We heard Aquel Buenos Aires. I also spoke, I think it was Marcelo Alvarez. I'm not. And I asked him about tango, because I am a tango nut. And I guess the world has become very aware of tango. And he said a strange thing. He said that he remembered when he thought of tango, he thought of the period when the army was in charge, or it was very, very military in Argentina.
The interesting thing is that during the, well, let's go back a few years before, in the 40s, when Perón was the president, the General Perón, he made a point that in all the radio stations they would broadcast tango and folklore music. It was a very nationalistic thing, you know, just the music of the country. So everybody had to broadcast tango and folklore. So maybe that's why after that people kind of got tired of it, just because it was associated with Perón. You didn't want to hear any more tango or folklore.
It was an interesting comment, I thought, because I don't think anyone ever really mentioned that at all, but you would have had to be there to know.
But also the interesting thing is that there were a lot of during the military, that several military coups that we had in Argentina, and we had many of those, the tango was always there, but somehow, since the church was also involved in many things and trying to, you know, limit access to things, they even changed the lyrics of some of the songs, you know.
Well, it's pretty risque, I think, aren't they? I mean, the whole thing is very sensuous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of it, you know, even though they don't say it, you know, it always has a double meaning. I mean,
I think it has a single meaning.
For example, the oldest tango one of the most famous, El Choclo, which everybody knows, is a very common melody.
Oh, El Choclo, yes, sure.
Okay, that's El Choclo. El Choclo, I mean, when you say choclo in Argentina, it means corn, corn cob.
Oh, I thought it was an owl? What is the word?
No. Choclo is a corn cob. It's the corn when you eat it.
Yes, okay.
But it has another meaning, which I'm not going to say it in radio.
Okay.
But just you look at the figure, you know. Okay, that's what it is.
Well, I think we'll edit that one out.
you can leave it to your imagination.
Wow, that's very interesting.
So you have to kind of you have to read about all this. So, of course, you know a lot of the lyrics. It's same as the blues here too. I mean, a lot of stuff, you know.
Yes, well, it's
double
suggestive.
Meaning, you know?
Right. We've just heard El Choclo, performed by Luis Vinicio and his folk orchestra of Argentina. But now when you put this album together, you mm-hmm. actually said that it was a lot of it were they popular songs or people that were songs that were popular to people. I mean, the nostalgic aspect of everything here.
Yeah, the thing is, all these pieces here, and somebody asked me that, are this based on popular songs? No, they're not based on any song that we remember singing. I mean, these are all original melodies of each composer. What is, it's based on the folkloric part of the music from Argentina, so different dances that we have from different regions of the country. So each composer did his best to, you know, reflect the style of that dance. But these are their own songs, their own compositions, and it's not based on any, you know, taken out of a traditional song and transcribe it. That's not here the point. These are all original works.
Yes, but they are more... Not exactly in the classical vein, are they? They're
Yes, they're treated in a classical way. But for example, there are only two here in the CD that I might say are what you said, you know, more popular oriented. Is the first one Pignone. Those are very folkloric oriented. But what makes it probably classical is the way the piano is treated. It's as a composition, the structure. So it's a lot of things that make it that you can tell, you know, okay, this is a classical piece, but based on a folkloric element.
We listen now to two songs by Remo Pignone, Por el Sur and Como Queriendo. Music of Remo Pignone, we heard two songs, Por el Sur and Como Queriendo, performed by our guest today, pianist Miriam Conti.
The other one, for example, Buchardo, who has a song here, more lyrical aspect. It's a kind of a more also folkloric aspect of the music in Argentina. And then the tango, yes, I think I have four or five tangos here. Those are really... you know, popular tangos, but treated in a very classical way at the piano.
Yes.
For example, Salgan, who's still around and he still plays the piano wonderfully, he was a classically trained pianist. He studied with one of the major teachers in Argentina, who was also the teacher of Martha Argerich and Daniel Barenboim and all these great pianists. So
yes.
Vincenzo Scaramuza. So he was one teacher who, you know, taught a lot of this great pianist. And Salgan was one of them. And there's another tango composer whose name is Pugliese, who also came from the same school.
I know Pugliese.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
What is that? The famous one, the tango, I know. Yeah,
yes.
A wonderful tango by Pugliese, Recuerdo, and it's very, very popular.
He was a great pianist too. Pugliese was a wonderfully classically trained pianist. And that's why sometimes, you know, it bothers me that people separate the idea of classical and popular and they put it separate. I mean, everything is intertwined, you know, and one needs the other, you know.
Music of Horacio Salgan, performed by pianist Miriam Conti. We hear Don Agustin Bardi, and then I Salonisti, the ensemble, with music of Osvaldo Pugliese, Recuerdo. We've just heard the tango Don Agustin Bardi by Horacio Salgan, performed by our guest today, Miriam Conti, followed by Recuerdo, performed by I Salonisti, that wonderful tango by Osvaldo Pugliese.
A lot of the popular music in Argentina, it was taught and it was performed by a lot of the classically trained musicians. Even the tango, in the beginning of the tango years, and we're talking about late 1800s, beginning of 1900s, yes. All the composers and the musicians were all trained. I mean, they didn't improvise or anything. They were really trained as violinists, as pianists, as flutists. They went to conservatories.
And the tango, when you see the real tango orchestras, the pianists mm-hmm. and the violinists, the basses, I mean, they're actually playing, for me, in a classical way. That's what's exactly. so exciting about it. And the ensemble is very mm-hmm. classical.
And also going no farther in this country, in America, I mean, the jazz performance, you know, Count Basie and people like that. I mean, they when they were little, they played the Hannon and played Bach and played Mozart.
Sure.
You know, they had to play all the classical. I mean, they were trained in that. So I don't like to separate classical and popular music because it's all together and it's one needs the other. And I wish more, you know, in conservatories, music conservatories, they would explore this aspect of the classical music. That is, most of classical music is based on popular music, too. I mean, look at some of the Bach pieces, the suites. I mean, there are a lot of dances.
They're
all based
suites.
On
sure.
dances from that time yes. that people actually dance, you know, or even Mozart, some of the operas, you know, you have things that have to do with the folklore.
At the time,
so,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Of the time. So, and those were popular at that time. So same with this, you know, to be able to play a Chopin mazurka, you have to understand the folklore of Poland. You know, you have to understand
exactly.
how that mazurka is done or the Polonaise. So everything is kind of, you know, melting one into the other. So I don't like to separate these things. You
well,
know,
I understand what you're saying, but of mm-hmm. course, this particular album, it's very. How can I don't want to use the word relaxing, but there's a sadness in it too. A lot of the songs,
yes, very nostalgic.
Very nostalgic, and of course that's what you say it is. It's sweet. You know, there's a sweetness, a sensitive, very. Well, a longing, I guess you feel
yes,
there.
Yes, like I, you know, I put sour sweet kind of
yeah.
Feeling to it, and typically the Argentine personality tends to be a very melancholic soul, very mm-hmm. very nostalgic, sometimes a little. Maybe a little too depressed about
well,
things
it's
for
like,
no reason.
It's like the Russian music.
Yeah,
know,
it has that thing, that heaviness.
That.
You know?
Yes, so, and there's a sadness.
And I think it comes from a lot of the influences that Argentina had, you know, coming from big Italian immigration, Spanish immigration, mm-hmm. But also all the years of, you know, just complete mess, you know,
politics,
the military and all that. So it kind of, little by little, you know, it makes you kind of feel sort of down about life and things, and if you read some of the tango lyrics, I mean, it's just so depressing.
But
every one of them.
do these long for an earlier time or a better time? I mean, a lot of the nostalgic that you feel in these. I mean, there is something in there. There's a quietness about it in the many of the pieces.
The reason I named it Nostalgias Argentinas because it probably is something that has to do with me more than any of these composers. Uh-huh. Because many of these composers lived in their own countries and they had their experience there and they died there. I mean, I left the country when I was a teenager. And when you're very young, maybe you don't feel the differences. But when you're a teenager, you do suffer through a lot of changes when you change culture and you have to learn a new language and you have to go to high school with other kids that don't understand you.
Yes.
So there is a nostalgia there maybe for the music that I would have liked to maybe learn when I was there, that somebody would say, okay, you know, here's Piñone, here's Guastavino, here's this. Kind of a thing that of something that it would have been nice in the past, in my past, that I would have learned quicker, you know, and didn't have to wait this long to really get involved in the music.
We've just heard five cantos populares, five popular songs by the 20th century composer Carlos Guastavino, whose centennial is being celebrated this year. His music is romantic and lyrical, and it's a specific school of composition following the tradition of composers rooted in the nationalist movement. Guastavino was content to follow throughout his life a romantic approach to his music. He admired Rachmaninoff, Chopin, and Schubert. Our guest, Miriam Conti, was the pianist. The problem with life is, you know, as you live it, you say, why didn't I know that sooner? You know, that's of course, we all.
But
we
the
all
sad thing
that.
Is that you were at the place where you should have learned that. And that, you know, I find that it happens in almost every country,
yes,
too.
Yes, of course.
Here, too. I mean, you know, you've gone to music conservatories and American music is not really promoted much. Mm-hmm. I mean, performers don't play much American music, maybe Gershwin or Copland or a few
the
here
same
and
ones,
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The same ones and maybe one that they have to learn because it's a mandatory work at some competition. And if they like the piece, they might perform it again. But there is something about, you know, conservatories that don't promote first their own composers.
I think it's in a larger sense, too. Is it appropriate if you're learning technique of a certain style? You know, I mean, if you want to develop, you know, your technical skills with your instrument, say, or
yes.
with your voice. But generally speaking, these, you said, music from the 1920s that started this style of music up to the present day.
Yeah, the different tendencies, that's what I meant when it was the 1920s was a time of new tendencies. Composers were trying to find their own voice. You know, some people were looking at Stravinsky, some were looking at mm-hmm. Franck, at the French school. They were all trying to create, you know, something new, a new style. But in the end, they all ended up being very Argentine in the way of expressing, but with the influences of all these different tendencies. So we do have a lot of composers that went into 12-tone music and serialism.
Of course.
Which I don't put it on the CD,
yes.
but we do have a lot of those composers in Argentina, too. So So it was a time of a lot of changes in music, and also it was nice because there were a lot of exchanges between countries, you know, Argentina and the U.S. and or Europe, you know, people were traveling.
Yes,
more
I think
to different
that
countries.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, well, mm-hmm. with the whole style of living and as the,
right.
the technology, of course, developed.
Right.
So now on another subject, you are very, very involved with promoting young pianists, and when mm-hmm. you say through competitions or how else?
Through a lot of festival and competitions, I am in the process of the auditions in Argentina for young pianists who would come here to the States to either get a scholarship to study in some music conservatory or perform in a festival or a competition. And in exchange, I take piano teachers here from Juilliard or from Eastman School, different conservatories, and they go to Argentina and they select the young pianists, but these teachers also get an opportunity to perform and give master classes. And this is through the U.S. State Department, so it's an exchange
yes.
that I've been working on for a couple of, I mean, since 2007. And it's working out perfectly because we have a couple of young students here already getting a master's at NYU in piano and other schools, so they're, it's a wonderful thing. And I want to and I'm keep doing it until, you know, somebody says, there's no more money.
What do you think of the music business these days?
Ooh, this is my last question. That takes another interview. But I think the music business is going through
a lot of
changes.
Is it alive and well?
I think so. I mean, I look at the competitions. I judge a lot of competition, and it amazes me that every year there's more pianists competing than ever. Every year is more pianists, more young pianists. When you look at the application for music conservatories, there are, I mean, record numbers of pianists that want to study. So I don't know what's happening, but there are more pianists
that
want to.
That's very interesting.
So it is interesting. But I have to tell you on the side, and this is to finish, that most of these kids are from China. So,
well, yes, well.
So maybe they'll save our world.
That's a very interesting topic. The one thing I wanted to say was that we used to have community concerts. They don't really do that kind of thing anymore.
No.
So
no.
Where do they get their experience as a soloist? I mean,
yeah.
Where do you do that? It's not like being in an orchestra.
You have to do it your own. This is if you want to be in this career, you have to do it yourself. You have to push and that seems to be the way. I mean, everything that I've done in my career, I've done it myself.
Well,
so it's even though, of course, having come in from Juilliard, that's a good passport to have, and it kind of opens up doors.
Yes,
to many
it does.
Things,
it
you know?
Does.
So that helps too. But in the end, you know, I see that the musician is on his or her own, and they have to just keep, you know, pushing until, you know, they.
Yes, because there is a situation here with getting known, and of course, as mm-hmm. soloists, because pianos are. You know,
yeah.
piano, study of piano is so very different. But
right.
a pleasure to speak with you. And
thank you, Jill.
I hope that that you will be releasing another album soon. This is your second on the Steinway & Sons, a very prestigious
The second
you know.
On Steinway, but it's actually my number 18.
Really? Oh, my.
Oh, yeah, I've done other recordings. Through, yeah, I've been
well,
recording.
We'll
I love recordings. So.
We'll have to research them. What is your, quickly, another idea that you have for a new one that is a lot different?
Well, the
from
next one is actually, it's going to be the solo piano music of Poulenc. I'm going French now.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we're put aside some time for us and we'll be speaking
okay.
to you.
Wonderful
thank you
so
to
much.
Speak to you, Marianne, and the very, very
thank
best
you.
Of joy. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Our guest today has been pianist Marianne Conti, who has just released a new album, Nostalgias Argentinas, on the Steinway & Sons label. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening. Thank you.